Oh, you guys, I can't tell you how wonderful it is to be home. My heart just swells. You're going to probably see me cry this morning, and for that, I apologize in advance. I'm an emotional individual, and thank you. That's very Filipino. When you take a picture of a Filipino, they thank you for that privilege of having been the object of your picture. So there are so many things that I do right now that I've just sort of absorbed being in the Philippines, and and saying thank you when somebody takes my pictures is one of them. You're going to have to laugh at me. I also point with my lips, by the way. The bathroom's over there. And I don't know how to do it. And when two people are talking and I need to go between them, lo and behold, I cut the way with my hand. And it's funny, these things. Oh, dear. I'm sorry. Let's get that fixed up. I put together a video for you guys of my adventures. And it's not beautiful, but I think you'll get to at least an idea of what I've done. It's 15 minutes long, so please no snoring. But what you're going to see is I've grouped it together, pictures of my life. I should tell you first, by the way, I was in the Philippines. For those who don't know me, I was in the Philippines as a missionary midwife. There's a school that trains midwives to work in developing countries as missionaries and to make an impact in the infant and maternal mortality rates, which are soaring in the developing countries. And so it's a school that focuses, they choose missionary-minded women, train them to do a specific skill so that they're able to walk into a nation that wouldn't necessarily receive a missionary, but definitely would receive a midwife, and make an impact for Christ. And what you're going to see, pictures of my classmates. You're going to see, there was about 23, 24 in all, depending on how you look at it, students, 2 years, two different grades. So you had the senior class and the junior class. And you're going to see pictures of us bonding. You're going to see a lot of white people. You think you were in the Philippines. Why are there so many white people in these pictures? But you have to realize most of my time was spent studying. I had my nose in a book 12 hours a day some days, and working, studying 50 hours a week, working another 30. So I had 80-hour week kind of schooling. We had our clinicals put right on top of our academic schooling, so we jammed 3 years worth of information into 22 intense months. And so what you're going to be seeing is a lot of the pictures of the students, and then you're going to just see a lot of different outings that I did. You're so good to me, so good to me. You know I'm going to need these. So you're going to be seeing pictures of different outreaches, and then I'll explain it and open it up for questions afterwards. And then I have different stories to tell you as well. So let me get this started, and I'll shut up. The work that the school is doing there is very needed. But more than that, I guess you could hear me. I was talking pretty loud. So the school serves a purpose. We only deal with a certain class of women. They have to make less than $100 a month as a family in order to qualify to deliver at our clinic. Typically, most people make about $1 a day, $1.50 a day. And with that comes a specific kind of need. Malnutrition is a problem, anemia is a problem, other complications these problems and complications lead to, such as hemorrhage, is common with the women that deliver at our clinic. But I can rattle on. I thought what would be best, since I have a limited amount of time, I decided not to take 2 hours. I thought I'd share with you a story. Many of you have been receiving my newsletters. You hear my stories. But I thought I'd elaborate, because in my newsletters, I'm not able to give you all the details, and sometimes the details are what make the story. So I'm going to share with you a day in the life, actually 2 hours in the life of Stephanie doing a baby check at Mercy Maternity Clinic. Give you an idea of what it's like. Now, where I lived was right next to the clinic. We had a house, a compound, a dormitory where all the women, the students, lived. And once a baby is born, you're the midwife, you're called, you're on call for when she comes back for a baby check, because she comes to the clinic for a baby check. And so one mid-morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, I got a call saying that I had a patient at the clinic, and I went over for a baby check, and it was a really quiet morning. There was just one labor in one of the beds. But she had been there for a day and a half, and it was a complicated labor, and they were getting ready to transport her. She was starting to get tired. It was actually her ninth baby, and she was 30. So, and she'd been in labor for almost 2 days, and they had tried to facilitate in every way they knew how. She had an IV in for exhaustion. And the baby just wasn't coming. And she also had a history of shoulder dystocia. For those of you who aren't familiar with terminology such as shoulder dystocia, it's when the baby is birthed partially, where the head is birthed, but then the shoulders get stuck on the pubic bone, and the baby isn't able to come out, and sometimes, if the baby isn't out soon enough, can asphyxiate and die. It's a complication. It's a complication that midwives never want to see because it requires some fast action and some harried positions, and you do what you got to. Sometimes you have to break the baby's clavicle in order to get the baby out. A clavicle will heal better than a dead baby. However, knowing this woman's history, things were not progressing well. They were ready to transport because she'd been pushing for over an hour and a half and no progress. With a woman who's having her ninth baby, that's typically not what you expect. Well, she heard that she was being transported, didn't like that idea, decided to push in earnest. So as one of my colleagues was going to get her husband, she decided to push, and, well, great, the baby's going to be born. But I'm not really there. I'm doing a baby check. I just get called in for an assist and to help the family, because the baby is born to his eyeballs and won't budge. And a minute ticks by, and my supervisor calls me, and she calls in reinforcements for help, because this is a minute on the halfway out is not good. You only have a few minutes, depending on how healthy the baby is to start with, before the baby asphyxiates. And she calls me in. She said, politely, "Stephanie, hang around. I think we might have a shoulder dystocia going on." And she's doing all the maneuvers. She's moving the woman in different positions, and we're helping her to do such, to get the woman in the right position for this birth. And anxiety is high. Adrenaline's pumping because the baby needs to be born. And 2 minutes tick by. We move her around. We move positions around again. The woman's not being cooperative. And the baby's just not coming. And the baby's turning bluer and bluer and bluer. And another minute ticks by. The beautiful thing is the room is calm. We're working together. It's working out. But the baby's still very blue. And everyone's prepared for resuscitation. But we're still, the adrenaline's jumping. 10 minutes before, the baby wasn't even close to being delivered, and now it's been 3 minutes, the baby hasn't been born. And what do? We finally get her again in another position, and the shoulder starts sliding, which is what you want, what you're hoping for, it's what you're looking for, because once the shoulder is born, then the rest of the baby comes to the pump, no problem. Fortunately, a supervisor was able to get the baby the shoulder, but it's been 4 minutes now. You typically want the baby out within a minute, 30 seconds to a minute. It's been 4 minutes, and the baby's pink blue, but blue still, like the color of this woman's lovely dress. That's a deep blue, cyanotic. It's not what you expect a baby to look like when they're born. However, finally, the baby comes out and then gets stuck in the middle. It was a group effort, but praise God, the baby was born, and we were able to resuscitate. The baby started pinking up within a minute or two. 3 minutes later, the baby was pink, crying, happy, successful. We're a little bit excited. You don't see those very often. Now, I've spent only 2 years there, fair enough, but I had the privilege of seeing and participating in actively just under 300 births. And during that time, I had never seen one before. Babies typically come out and it's not a problem. Yeah, they come out. It's not something I share with you to make you fearful of birth. This was the exception. However, this happened at 20 past 1. At 25 past 1, I got called out, even though I'm not on shift, I'm not on duty, I'm just visiting for a baby checkup, to help with a woman who just walked in very active labor. She is running to the bed as fast as a woman with a belly sticking out like this can run. And she's making it very clear that it's time for her to push. And she's making a little bit of noise, which is very uncommon for the Filipino people. Filipino people, especially Filipino women, are very reserved. And even in childbirth, they're very, very quiet. Surprisingly so, to the point where you almost forget they're in pain. Of course, you never forget they're in pain. However, she made it clear it was time. So all of the confusion and chaos that's happening in this birth over here is now pulled away. I'm pulled away, and my supervisor, still with her, waiting for the rest of the birth, the afterbirth, she asked me, would you please take care of it? Because there's a brand new student who's now up first, who's supposed to catch this baby, and she needs a little supervision, so I've been asked to stay to help supervise this birth. The woman comes in, she pushes 5 minutes, the baby's out. Beautiful, 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 uncomplicated birth. Beautiful. We're waiting for the rest of the birth. And then the guard, it's been 20 minutes, 25 minutes since this first birth. Then the guard calls in jeepney birth. Now, jeepney, for those of you who aren't aware, is the equivalent of a bus. And the bus system looks sort of like an old Jeep with padded benches on each side. And what had happened, this is common, a guard would come showing up saying, there's been a baby born in the taxi, come quick, or a baby ready to be born in the taxi, because, you know, if they can't get a taxi, then they get a jeepney. And this woman happened to find a jeepney. So she got in the jeepney, had her baby, and they kept coming to the clinic. And so I get out there with another person. I've been pulled away from the second birth in order to help with this third birth, which is happening outside in a jeepney. And this isn't all that uncommon. Sometimes women wait a little bit longer, or there's traffic, or, you know, things of this nature. And so it's very common. I think at least a dozen of my babies I caught in taxis as they come honking really loud towards and get your adrenaline all up. But my adrenaline's still running from this complicated birth, and it's still on high for this very uncomplicated birth. And then I run out to the taxi, or jeepney, excuse me, and it's only been less than 30 minutes since the first birth. And I walk in, and there is this woman lying on this bench in this back of this bus holding her baby. Baby had definitely been out for quite some time. They had even thought to put clothes on the baby. And it should have been my first indication that something was a little bit off, but it wasn't. And we, of course, finished the process of delivering the afterbirth and got the woman on. She walked to the clinic, and she's still holding her baby, and she lies down, and they're smiling, and they're gooing and guying over their little beautiful, beautiful boy. But I look at the baby a little closer, and there's dirt on the baby. And there's still confusion, there's still chaos going on in the birth room, lots happening, but this is a typical day at Mercy. This is common. Sometimes we'll have 6 babies born in 4 hours or things of this nature, but this happened to be 3 babies born in about 40 minutes. And I'm charting, and I'm taking care of this woman, I'm getting ready, and I keep asking him questions, and my Visayan, and I do speak a little bit of Visayan, please don't quiz me later, it's not that good. But I'm interviewing this woman, asking, so when did the baby come out? And I was expecting the baby to be born in the jeepney, and things of this nature. And she's telling me, And I'm writing it all down, but I'm not fully getting the whole story. So I have to wait until my Filipino supervisor arrives, and she starts re-interviewing the woman. Turns out, this beautiful, capable, strong Filipino woman delivered, or her husband delivered, her baby on the side of a banana plantation an hour before. She delivered the baby, walked holding the baby for over an hour, flagged down a jeepney, got in the jeepney. They were thoughtful. The baby's cold. I'm going to dress the baby. The baby was covered in fertilizer. She delivered on the side of the dirt road and just didn't make it in time. It was a fast, precipitous birth is what it's called. And she delivered her baby all by herself. She came in excited, and we finished the process. We helped her out. But it was a little bit chaotic that morning. I'm trying to describe to you what I just lived for the last 2 years. I know it might not be appropriate talking about babies and, you know, such things. And I'm not trying to share this story with you to say anything other than this has been my life. You sent me to study to be a midwife, and I studied to be a midwife. I spent a lot of time in my books, and I'm grateful for the experience. I'm a midwife now. I had the privilege of delivering 127 babies. This last year was really busy for me. I delivered 85 babies this year. And each baby has its own story, each mother, each couple, each family, that I got to participate in that. It was life-changing. I am no longer the same person I was. I might look the same, more or less, but I am different. Everyone wonders why. Why? What made you up and decide all of a sudden? Is this a midlife crisis for you? I am getting closer to midlife, but it's not quite there. And my answer to that question is, I have had a heart for missions since I was saved. I turned to Christ when I was 18 and have wanted to and been a part of missions my entire Christian life. I was a missionary in France, went to Mexico in short term, went to China in short term. I participated where I could in missions because I know that we serve a missionary God. Our God is the ultimate missionary. Jesus was that missionary. He came to earth. He communicated the gospel to us. He is a missionary God. And so with that, understanding that, I want to be also a means of effectively teaching people and telling them about Christ. I want that. And when I went to France, I spent a year in France as a missionary. I worked with prostitutes. I worked alongside a Calvary chapel there. I worked with university students doing Bible study work. And I enjoyed it, but I'm also a practical individual. I also enjoy doing something tangibly, touching lives, doing something physically for bettering the lives of those around me. Yes, I want to tell them about Christ. There's nothing more important than telling a person about Christ. Spiritually is where it needs to start. But I also want to be able to touch the lives of the women that are hurting in developing countries, the women that are dying, that are bleeding to death, that are babies that are not living because there's no one there to resuscitate them after 4 minutes. They're blue, they're left to die because nobody knows how to do it. These are simple skills that I've learned. Yes, they're not everyday skills, but they're skills that I can pass on to other women. And in a developing country, that's going to make a difference. Even if it makes a difference for one life, it makes a difference. And so my motivation was to get the skills, the practical skills, so that I can enter these different countries. Some countries are closed to missionaries, but they're very open to midwives. And I do know from friends that have been in Muslim countries that the missionary midwives have the greatest access into the lives of these women who aren't even allowed to leave their homes, but the midwife can enter their home. It's a privileged position as a midwife, and I'm grateful for the skills. They're not going to sit on a shelf. This is not over. I hope to use these skills wherever I happen to land. I don't know where God's going to keep taking me, but I know He's going to take me somewhere. The next little step for me happens to be Haiti. For those of you who know, I'm going to Haiti for 3 months. It's a vision tour. I'm going to learn of a particular organization. There's a ministry that's been there 25 years. They're doing a lot of work in the community. They've planted a church. They have a feeding program. They have an orphanage. They have a women's program. They have all kinds of different activities, and they've been praying for a birthing clinic to open, and they've invited me out to join them, to help them. My heart has always been to help other midwives open clinics, to help facilitate that in any way, shape, or form, and he's given me an opportunity to do just that in Haiti, and I'm super excited. It's a chance for me to go learn about the culture and see if I fit long term. And most importantly, to help them get their clinic started. One of the fun things I am super excited about is my French is fairly decent, and in Haiti they speak a form of French, a French Creole, and it's gonna be wonderful. It's going to be wonderful to communicate perfectly with these laboring women. I'm so looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it a lot. So, I got off the track a little bit. But I wanted you guys to know what I'm doing. I want to be here to answer your questions and show you that what you've been a part of, you sent me, this is what you have been doing in the Philippines. This isn't what I've been doing in the Philippines. You followed me there with prayer. You've encouraged me tremendously. And I love you guys so much. I hope and pray that you will continue to pray with me as I head out to Haiti, as I know that it's through that prayer that lives are changed. And I'm going to end a story with one more story. And some of you guys know about this, for those of you who are a part of my newsletter and whatnot. I want to tell you one of the victories, one of the most extraordinary memories that I'm going to be keeping in the Philippines, is a family, Brian L. and Lornita Elliott. They're a couple that actually wanted their children. It's not always the case. Yeah, they were married before they got pregnant, which is also not always the case. And they were a couple, a young couple, deeply in love. And her first pregnancy, she carried to 4 months and miscarried. And they were devastated. They lost their first child. And next year she got pregnant again, excited, but when she was term, 9 months along, she got very sick. She got a fever, a very high fever for over 3 days, and her baby was born dead. They were devastated. And when I met her, she was pregnant for the third time. She's 25, expecting, hopeful, fearful, and I knew that I needed to give her a little extra attention, which with 700 prenatals a week, you have to sort of single a few ones out, the ones that need a little extra attention, and give them the extra attention that you can afford, because we were busy, we were very busy, and in many senses we were often too busy. But how do you say no? How? Yeah. But I chose her and I said, I'm going to be your midwife. I'm going to follow her. I'm going to be the only one to take care of you. And when I first met her, she was st- still relatively early on in her pregnancy, and she was a ball of nerves. She was a little nervous. I mean, when she reached the 4-month mark, when she lost her first child, she was a basket case, and she made it clear she was a little nervous. And that month's time passed, and she started feeling a little better. And every time I saw her, she was a little bit more relaxed, and we were able to talk more about her pregnancy and just enjoy the process. And as she became term and knew that she could deliver at any time, she started to relax, and her family started to relax, because this is the desired child. This is their hope. They've been praying for this child for a long time. And she came. I got a text from her saying it was time. They communicate by text there. It's insane. Some people can text 300 times a day in that country. It's nuts. So, you know, early in her labor, she's texting me every couple of minutes. I've had another pain. I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. And I was excited. And she brought her into the clinic. And we're excited because her baby's doing well. And all she needed to hear was her baby's heart tones. And she relaxed. The baby's still alive. And her husband in particular, he was a mess. And he also just needed to just hear that baby's heart tones and know that it's going to be okay this time. And we let him go home and labor at home. As a busy clinic, we can't let everyone stay at the clinic. It's relatively small for the number of women that come through. But we stayed in contact by texting. And she came back a lot more active a couple hours later. And she progressed well. And everywhere she went, he was literally 2 inches behind. Just kept, followed her. He was constantly touching her. He was constantly just right there, anything she needed. And it was beautiful to watch. It was beautiful to see. And she, when it came time to deliver, she did an amazing job. She delivered this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful baby girl, baby Kriza. And after she was born, they both started weeping. He in particular, you could see, and he was being strong for her. He was being really strong. And he just started heaving, bawling. And the only thing he'd say, and he kept saying it over and over again, is, "She's alive. And of course, that made everyone in the room cry. Because this was a child that they loved and wanted, which isn't always the case. And she is doing great. She's doing great. I was probably changed and transformed more in that situation than they. But the beautiful thing is, there's joy in life. He knit us in our mother's womb. We are a creation that he has put together. There is beauty in life. You guys have been a part of that. Thank you for that. Thank you for praying for me. Thank you for encouraging me. Thank you for sending me the packages. Thank you for just being here for me. You guys have made being away from you so much easier. It was hard, believe me. You guys are pretty fantastic. And coming home to you is pretty fantastic, too. So I look forward to seeing what next adventures. And I can't wait. I know I'm here for a short time. I'm here for a month and a half. But I can't wait to catch up with you guys, to hear what God's been doing with you. And so expect to have me track you down. I'm coming to get you. I'm going to find out what's been going on with you, because there's truly joy in being together as a family. So I've probably said my piece, but I wanted to leave it open for questions. Does anybody have a question? Did I not explain something, or do you want to know something in particular? Now's the time to ask, because probably somebody else wants to know too. But if not, find me, pin me down, ask me questions. I'm going to be around. And I'm going to be looking forward to hearing from you, from each and every one of you guys.
you had said before you left that one of the hardest adjustments would be learning to share your room and share everything with all those other people, getting out of your comfort zone. How'd that go?
Oh, it was really hard. The first 6 months, he's asking me how it was. For those who may not have heard, he asked how it was from living alone to living with so many and the adjustment that was. And it was really, really hard. The first 6 months was very difficult, and I had been on my own living alone for almost 12 years. And so moving from alone with my cats, yes, I was one of the cat ladies, to a house full of 18 women at that time, was a little chaotic, and God just broke me to the point where I just let it go, and got used to community living, and after 2 years, I can guarantee you that is what I miss the most. Dinner time with 18 women around a dinner table talking about birth. I miss it, man. I miss it hardcore. Never being alone. Now, the Filipino people are a very community oriented, family oriented community, and it was a lesson I needed to learn. I had forgotten the importance of community. And even when I got back here, I'm staying with some wonderful friends in Las Vegas right now. I told them that they're not allowed to leave me alone. Not even 1 minute. I'm not allowed to be alone. You don't have to talk to me nonstop, but you're not allowed to leave me alone in a room. It was hard. In fact, the first night that I had to sleep alone in my own room, I wanted to cry. So he changed me. Full circle. Now I just give me dormitory living. I don't know how to do it any other way. Right, he was asking, for those who didn't hear, he was asking if any of the other students are going to Haiti with me. In fact, I was the one that started the whole move towards Haiti and got everyone really excited, and people are choosing to follow me. But they're not starting it with me. In fact, another graduate student is choosing to come and check out Haiti as well. There's a lot of focus on Haiti. Haiti is the third poorest country in the world, and they have some pretty staggering maternal and infant mortality rates. It is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and there's just a lot of need. There's a lot of need. And so there's a lot of need for midwives, and I think there will be a couple of students that join me, perhaps next year's graduating class. There's definitely a student from that class that wants to come out and participate, but it will be in his time schedule. My class, there were 12 of us, which was the largest class that they had ever had at this school. One is hoping to go to Indonesia. Another one is going to China. Two of them are starting a clinic down in sub-Saharan Africa. They might even be going to Mozambique soon. I think they're planning to be there in December. And another one, two others have to go back to Canada for some more schooling. And a third one, or the last one, I don't know how many. Oh, two more. One is planning on getting more schooling as well here in the United States. And I think the last one is in Switzerland, and I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up in Northern Africa. They're all women with hearts for missions, and they also need your prayers as they head out and prepare to do what I'm doing. Hopefully, what I'm doing. Any other questions? Yeah? This is the Filipino version of this. So the peace sign, what we typically do when we do, or the bunny ears, or whatever you want to look at it. The Filipino, this is, don't I look beautiful? They frame their face, and it's just what they do. I also do it in pictures, as you can tell. I point with my lips. I do weird gestures with my hands. I'm more Filipino than I realize. And I enjoy rice now. So, any other questions? Yeah. She's asking about the prenatals and devotions that we did for the women before the prenatals, and then their walk with Christ. One of the areas that I was burdened the most about this school was my inability to do more. And one of my hopes in starting a clinic is, and especially alongside a church, is to be able to disciple the women much more. When you're working 80 hours a week, it's really difficult to do more than that. And each and every one of my classmates, when we debriefed before coming home, said the exact same thing. We wanted to be able to pour into these women's lives more, but we had finals and exams and an intense study and more intense work schedules and schedules where three babies are coming out in 30 minutes, and just it was high stress. It was very high stress, and a lot happened, but not what I wanted to see, not the spiritual dynamics that I wanted to connect with some of these women. And I was able to pray for each and every one of them. Every woman that walked through that clinic got prayed for. Every Muslim that walked through that clinic got prayed for. And it is a start, and there's a witness, and they watch us, and they watch the way we serve them compared to what happens at the local hospital, and they desire to come to us. Even those that can afford much better desire to come to us. Because they're cared for so much more holistically, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. But I'm challenged as well. I wish there was more follow-up. I wish there was more discipleship with these women. Some of them are Catholic, some of them are born again, some of them are Jehovah's Witnesses, some of them are Muslim. They come in, they hear the gospel, the word goes out, and it never comes back void. And that's what we're hopeful for. I don't know if I answered your question, but I can't answer it because I don't follow up with these women like I'd hope. And what I want to do eventually is to be able to follow up with women and disciple them and make more of a connection. That's what I hope for you. Yeah, we do. There's never a shortage of need for midwives. Yes, Bob.
Step three, you're beautiful. Number one, did the government hassle you, want red tape, or did you just fly right through?
He's asking if the government hassled me or if I was able to fly right through. What do you mean by that? The Filipino government letting me work over there?
Right. Being born again and the whole system.
Okay.
Hassle or, like here, a lot of red tape would want to do something. Over there, did somebody take care of your problems or what?
When we first got there, when so many white women showed up all of a sudden, because we were the largest class in the history of the school, the Department of Health gave us a lot of problems, trying to figure out what all these white people, what are all these putis doing here, and why are they working, you know? And puti is a Filipino or Visayan for white person. And it was just a spiritual attack. But God took care of it, and they didn't give us any trouble after that first month or so, because the clinic that we work in is the largest charity birthing clinic in the country. And we deliver more babies a month than some of the hospitals in town. And the Department of Health really likes us. We do a service to their community. And so eventually they let us just do what we were doing and didn't give us any trouble. But midwives are restricted in that country. They're not allowed to deliver babies at home, for instance. And so that's the clinic. But I probably am speaking past my time. I loved your questions. I love you guys. Please pin me down. Ask me more questions. And give me more hugs. I don't have enough of those. Do you want to come back up here? Okay.